Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. We're going to do something very different than we've ever done. We've never done an interview. We've been doing our daily, our 5-minute, our actionable items for the type A powerful women who love to listen to this podcast. But in my travels, I've come across a powerful woman who will serve to connect you to your power while releasing relational and family trauma. She'll describe that better than I would. But Marine Selenet from France originally, now in the States, published Hay House author with her wonderful book that I've been skimming through it, and I've just got to go deep. It deserves that much time and attention. I'll probably be using some of the activities in it with clients. Her book, Connected Fates, Separate Destinies, is out now. And she's had an interesting path to this work, some time in Miami as a publicist, from what I understand, then up to New York to learn with some of the best in this field and area of concentration that she found so powerful in her personal journey and now wanting to share it with others and make a really big difference in their lives. And we'll talk a little bit about that today and share some things with everybody out there. I wanted to mention the book right out of the gate because a lot of our listeners, type A's, you are action takers. You may want to jump straight in and go looking for that even before listening to the rest of this discussion, but don't go anywhere because we're going to have a lot of great stuff. So welcome to the show and being the first interview guest.
Thank you so much, Barry. I'm so honored to be the first one. I don't know. I like it. So thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome. You know, I came across you kind of happenstance on Soho House app, where I'll sometimes look and see what events are going on. And Anna and I had spent a few months in Austin at one point, so I'll also occasionally look at Austin. I think the notifications are still on for events going on in Austin. You were doing a live workshop at the Soho House in Austin. You do so many events and help so many people. So that's how you kind of caught my interest. And then we chatted briefly, and I was like, you know, even when we chatted, it was not enough time. There was so much more here that's fascinating and I think really, really impactful and helpful to people. So I wanted to have you on. Really to share it with more people. I think one of the things I really like about you and your work is you come from a similar place that I do and that so many great practitioners do. It's a mission. It's not about ourselves solely, right? It's what I've learned, what I've discovered. I want to bring fire back to the tribe because I think this can help everybody. So why don't you share with the listeners a little bit about how you discovered family constellations and what it has meant to you.
Sure. So yeah, it's even like beyond a mission. It's like an extension of my true self. It's like you say, you know, like it's not even working for me. It's just who I am. But how I discovered family constellations, it actually happened in Miami. I studied psychology in Paris. And then with my ex-husband, we decided to move to Miami. And after months together in Miami, we broke up. And I really, really hit rock bottom at that time of my life. I was 24, 25. I didn't know what was wrong with me. My father, you know, like disappeared, you know, abandoned us a few years ago. I was just lost, to be honest with you. And I met this amazing woman who was into meditation and Abraham Hicks, the law of attractions, you know, like, and she was French too. And I felt a very deep connection with her. Basically, you know, like she really opened a new door for me, the spiritual door. And, you know, as a young French woman, I was very skeptical about it. Like, yeah, sure, as believe, receive, great, you know, like go for it. But then, you know, like one day, you know, she came back from New York and she was very excited about family constellations. And she was like, Marine, you have to try. You have to try. It's amazing. It's going to really blow your mind. And I was like, okay, whatever. And so I did a workshop and I wanted to work on my love life. I wanted to understand why I was unable to attract a healthy man. And I was sure it was because of my father. You know, like I was like, I know it's because of my father. He was never emotionally available, very distant, cold, strict. And actually, I was wrong. When I did the constellation, I discovered, you know, or the reality of my family system actually was slightly different of my own reality. Meaning that actually my family system, women are very, very strong. And men are seen as weak.
You had a very powerful visual image of that in the book. And by the way, I highly recommend reading the full story of how Maureen shares about this. But that image of the seated man, the seated father, right? And the passivity of the father and the overbearing power, the power imbalance of that powerful woman. Are you listening, listeners? Powerful women, powerful women. This may be relevant for some of you. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm sure, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one, you know, like dealing with this dynamic. And when I saw, you know, my mom being so powerful, you know, like overbearing, you know, like you just said, you know, and my father's being seated and very passive, I was like, what is that? Like, wow. And you know what, Barry, at that moment, it made sense.
Something clicks.
Yes, something clicks, you know, like I was not refusing it, you know, I was not being like, oh, come on, that's bullshit, you know, like I still know it's my father's fault. No, not at all. I was shocked, for sure, surprised, but also at that moment, I found peace. Like finally, you know, like I was like, you know what, maybe Maureen, and it's not about being wrong or right, it's just like, maybe your story that you have been telling yourself is not actually the truth and reality of the dynamics in your family system.
Oh my God, I love this so much. For so many reasons, it pulls back a veil of us sort of thinking we have the answer, but if it's not the right answer, we're working in the wrong direction, sometimes holding resentment or blame towards vilifying a particular parent. I thought I was getting into a daddy issues business. That would be the cliche when I was helping women around men, particularly strong, powerful, successful women. And yet, so much of the pain that felt like it was caused by men had a lot to do with the role modeling of that mother figure. So it can be a big aha moment, maybe as Oprah used to call it. What did you do after this insight, or this aha moment, and how did that lead you into family constellation and helping people?
Well, I thought it was so amazing because, again, I was a very skeptical woman, sarcastic. And I was like, wow, this is a real deal. It was so effective. And of course, I developed it more in my book, but I was like, you know what? If I was able to finally be more humble, and finally, you know, like drop the anger as a resistance towards my father, especially, you know, seeing my mother, seeing myself as well, you know, because it does not only reveal the truth and reality as it is, it also just show you like who I am, who you are. And there is no judgment. It's all about love, and this is who you are, and this is where you are right now, and there is nothing wrong with you. But if you really want to attract the man of your life, if you really want to be happy in your love life, you better drop the story here.
So in a way, it's helping you discern between what you thought was the truth or reality and it being a story.
Exactly, you know, and we can become so addicted to the story and use it as an excuse. Like, oh, that's why, you know, I'm attracted to an emotional and available guy, you know, because of my father. But I don't want that story to go on and on. I want, you know, to write my own story. And so after the workshop, I was like, okay, that was intense for sure, but also very powerful. Let me dive deeper into it. And then I was like, I guess I also finally found my missing piece as a former psychologist, you know, like background psychologist. I want to do family constellations because I can see the power in it.
Oh, you
And
experienced it.
yes, I experienced it and I was like, I love it. I really, really love it. I mean, you know, it's like when you meet your soulmate, Barry, or your twin flame, it's like a strong intuition.
It's a certainty, right?
It's a certainty.
When you have that level of conviction, then it's almost like I must do something.
Yes, and it was like, you know what? Here is my soulmate business. That was love at first sight.
Yeah, I love that. And I also love, as you kind of talk about how you then applied it to your personal life and professional life, that I always see constellation stuff as, you know, we used to go to these shopping malls. Not too many people do anymore. But at these shopping malls, they would have these maps. And sometimes on the map, they'd have a dot that would say, you are here. You know, it was a tremendously helpful dot on a map, because without the dot on a map, we don't know where we are in relation to anything else. And it becomes hard to know which way to go and discern ourselves from our surroundings. So I always felt like constellation theory helped place us within this context so we could discern better what's ours, what wasn't ours. I love that you also, in your book, go deeper than just the family of origin we grew up with, which is typically, I bring some of this into my work at times, but more the family of origin. You go beyond into that generational, intergenerational, and historical, and even cultural group.
Yes, that's very important because it's everything. It's not only your parents, it's your country of origins, what happened with your grandparents, even with your great-grandparents, also siblings, divorce, no divorce, like it is so much deeper than you think it is. And I loved actually your example about you are here. I think it's beautifully said. Family constellation, just reassess, you know, this is where you are. Be grateful for being where you are. But if you want better, if you want to grow, here is your reality and how to move forward.
So let's give a few examples. You're the most experienced person probably out of our listeners and on this particular podcast at this moment in this arena of family constellation. And so while I love talking about the concept, I think it really makes it more real and helpful and applicable for people when we give some examples, as you do in the book too. So particularly, I liked a part in the book where you were talking about how narrative stories that we have about our family, about people in our family, can show up and then affect us. And some of the examples you gave were things like, well, my mother cared more about her career than me, or it's my mom's fault. I never learned how to get along with women. You know, so these stories that we have, what are some of the stories that you hear come up the most often, or just any that sort of stand out for you that maybe are big mistakes that we make around narratives with family members?
So the most common story is when a child becomes the parent. Because unfortunately, mom or dad or both of them, they cannot be responsible. And so they cannot take care of you. So mom is depressed. I'm going to take care of you, mom. I'm going to stay with you in your bed. And maybe I'm going to cook for you, or maybe I'm going to make jokes, you know, so that maybe you will smile again. Maybe you will feel alive again. Because the thing is, at first, every child, every new child, every newborn is the next best chance to the family system to survive, so to heal.
I highlighted that one in the book. I think a lot of people highlighted that in the book from what it showed. Yeah, that's a good one. And you want to say that again? Because this is the Oprah thing, right? Say that again. So that
and again, every new child is the next best chance to your family system to finally heal.
It's a lot of pressure too, though, isn't it?
It's a lot of pressure. But guess what? Because as a child, we understand very quickly that our survival depends on our parents. We will do anything to be seen, heard, and recognized by them. Because then we belong. So it does not matter what we have to do as a child, because we do know that if, you know, I don't give entire satisfaction to my parents, maybe they're going to abandon me. Maybe they're not going to pay attention to me. And because you are a child, you do not know that actually your parents' emotion and feelings have nothing to do with you. You think you are the problem. So because you think you are the problem, you think you are the solution.
So Maureen, I'm loving that you're doing, let me just offer myself as an example then, right?
Go for it.
I got to clear my throat. You know that a long talk is coming when someone clears their throat. Ahem. Go in there. So it takes me back to the stuff that I shared in I think it was Asked for Landmark Inner Child workshop once, where it became so clear that I was trying to save my mom, be for her what she wasn't within her own life. So I was trying to fill a role in the family system that needed to be filled, that she couldn't fill. So speaking to this sort of functional thing, she would go on dates. She wanted love. She was divorced, right? And I cared about her happiness. And I would see, as soon as she came home, I knew if it went well or not. But if it did go well, sometimes she would start to get her hopes up. She'd get excited. Maybe I found him, the one. And then if something happened that hurt her, disappointed her, it ended, or he was with someone else, I would know right away, because that would be the morning she didn't come out of her room and the blinds would be drawn and she'd stay in bed and she'd be depressed. And so I'm there, right? My early teen years, sort of like, what do I do here? Like, dinner is not getting made. She's not out selling houses to pay her bills. And if this would drag on for a few days, or if it would happen as a cycle, you begin to be concerned. It's like, so do you become the kid that lightens the mood by telling jokes, or that tries to cheer mom up, or becomes encouraging? You know, do you kind of morph yourself, change yourself, reverse engineer yourself to the situation's demands within that family? And so that's what I found myself doing. And I think we shared when we first chatted that part of my healing work was, even when I began my coaching journey, I had to address not bringing any of those unresolved things into my coaching, like to not treat clients as I'm going to save them the way I couldn't save mom, which is why I had to do so much work and things like family constellation, which taught me, as one practitioner said to me, Barry, you have to take the S off your chest. Put another way, giving responsibility back. So yes, the parentified child that I became, and letting go of that role, even in adult life, you know, but that was the deal that I'd made for belonging and survival at that time. So I fully relate when you share about these things. I see it with clients, right? And I see it happening to them in their own narrative, their own way, their own family. How has your experience, you going through this personally, how does that help you when you're working with a client and you see their own story showing up? Or let me put it a different way. How do you help them, just methodology-wise, when you see them slipping into their narrative, right? And it's not the reality, it's not the facts, as you said, a distinction between facts and narrative. What do you do? What's something you might do typically to help them gain awareness that this is narrative, not reality?
I think I probably do. Are you connected with your inner child or with your adult self? Because the inner child is addicted to the narrative.
Can everyone tell the difference, though?
You can say, because I'm like, are you complaining right now? Mm-hmm. Are you blaming someone else? Mm-hmm. Or are you taking full responsibility?
That's a big difference.
Yeah, that's a difference, you know, Barry, between your adult self and your inner child. An inner child does not take any responsibilities. It's always a fault of someone else. While actually an adult can take full responsibility. And I highly encourage any adults to take full responsibility for other behaviors or actions, you know, like anything. So, and honestly, Barry, most of the time, it is provoking. It is triggering. I'm not saying it's easy, but they stop. And they're like, really, Maureen, I'm judging right now? I'm like, yes, you are. And that's okay. There is absolutely no problem here.
Now, you don't judge them for judging.
No, because you know what? Like, we're all doing our best at the end
that's
of the
right.
day.
100%.
And who am I? Who am I to judge you, actually? You know what? Like, I'm only here to help you and lead by example. But then finally, because I do think when you get triggered in the right way, okay, in the powerful way, you can finally stop. You can pause and just look at it from a different angle. And I think through a trigger, healing, understanding can happen.
Yes. It's easiest to observe a thing when it's happening. It's easiest to interrupt a thing while it's happening. So that idea of sort of some provocation or feeling things stirred up, that's our greatest window of opportunity for healing. You know, I also was fascinated by this idea of some order and structure. You know, I love the exercises you give in the book. You know, they're this wonderful blend of some are embodied, sort of more experiential physically. Others are more spiritual. By the way, for those listening, that doesn't have to mean they're religious in any way, shape, or form, but they can be more energetic or more visualization-based at times. Some could be more new age type thing, but that's not to say that this is woo-woo at all. I think it appeals to everybody. It's pragmatic, but at the same time, I love that there's some spiritual stuff. And then there's some analytical stuff because you're very intuitive but structured. And I love that you had a chapter where you talked about order and structure a little bit. The order of love, the first order of love being belonging, the second being balance, what you called everyone in their place, and the third order of love, precedence. That one I love because I didn't, you don't typically hear that one. So talk a little bit, if you would, about just the order of love, this belonging, balance, precedence.
So first of all, in order to feel balanced as an adult, you need to know where you belong, meaning where is my place? Because again, if you have been taking care of one of your parents, you did create a disorder.
Mm.
Like rather than being a child, you became a parent figure. So you don't know where to stand. Am I behind my parents, in front of my parents? You are in front of your parents. And this can never change, actually. Because when it changes, you know, like becoming the parent of your parents, you create confusion. And then, of course, because you as a child, you didn't get the chance, you know, like to have parents being here for you, you're going to ask another person to do it. Maybe it can be your partner, one of your children again, maybe your boss or one of your friends. And that's when your relationships, they're going to become so difficult actually to navigate. Because on one side, you want to be friends with that person, but on another side, your little girl or little boy is asking that person, could you please fill up for my missing parent?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I'll call it, it's like we're recasting for the role in a play.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm currently casting for someone new for the role of father, you know, or for the role of a mother who abandoned me, you know, this sort of thing. So yeah, you will enroll people and they're unwitting in it. They don't know that they're replaying a role in the story of your life in your head.
They don't know. Plus, it's also frustrating for them because they don't understand what actually you are asking from them. So belonging is like, I am your daughter. You are my mother. You are my brother. You know, it's very simple, actually. But there is one more thing that we add with family constellations is also recognizing any miscarriages, abortions, stillborns, estranged family members.
Yeah, that's so powerful. You referred to it, I can't recall the exact language, it was almost like ghosts, right? And like, you know, these are the absent figures, but figures nonetheless, like a cutout of a person's shape is still the shape of a person.
Yes, exactly. It's still a soul, if you would like, you know, like, and it still has an impact on you, whether you like it or not. So how many times my clients are like, oh, Maureen, we are two in my family. Okay, I have an older brother and then it's me. And I'm like, any miscarriages, abortions? And they're like, oh yeah, there is a miscarriage between me and my brother. I'm like, okay, so first of all, you are not the second one, but you are the third one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also a rainbow baby, which might mean that maybe you feel more anxious, you feel guilty of being alive, or you can also feel indecisive in terms of your life and which way to choose.
This is a new term to me, rainbow baby. Is this like the rainbow comes after the rain type
You
of
got
thing?
it.
Yeah.
You got
So
it.
it's after the miscarriage, the child that comes.
Exactly. And it's very heavy to be a rainbow baby because, you know, like, it is so terrible to lose a child, even at 1 month pregnancy, 2 months pregnancy, even 5, 6 months. And you have this deep sadness that unfortunately you're going to report on your rainbow baby, not because you want it, okay? But just because you're like, oh my God, this baby is gonna save me. This baby is gonna take care of my sadness. And it's too heavy for this little baby, because this little baby has nothing to do with your sadness. So when you acknowledge mom and dad had a miscarriage or an abortion or a stillborn, again, it creates this order back. This is where I belong. And I am not here to replace my unborn sibling, which is very, very powerful.
And how might that show up, for example? Because I love helping connect the dots for people so they understand. What's affecting me? Why is it affecting me? Awareness that they can apply. So how might that affect them as an adult or an adult in relationships?
It's affecting you because your family system does not like absent figures, secret, unspoken situations. So it's like you are going from one to three without acknowledging number two. And so if your parents have not been acknowledging this is what happened to me, the family system is going to ask the other baby, okay, please take care of it. So as an adult, even as a child, actually, Barry, you can be more anxious. You can feel guilty of being alive. There is an uneasiness to receive from life. As an adult, self-sabotage, self-punishment, like making a lot of money and then, bankruptcy.
Sometimes, sorry to interrupt, but what just hit me as you're sharing these examples, so many times that me in my life, friends, clients that I've worked with, will have a feeling we can't quite place the source of. I don't know why. I still have this restlessness, just this thing. And so in a way, doing this is, sometimes we can work without having to understand or know, but I really feel like this sort of family constellation therapy can reveal blind spots that other things maybe haven't revealed to us
It
about
does.
ourselves. Yeah.
It does. For me, it does.
Yeah. And also this term interrupted movement that you had, as I interrupt you right there. So I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
That's okay. Do not worry. But the interrupted movement is when the connection, the bond between you and your mom was unfinished. Because maybe your mom wasn't able to take care of you. Your mom also maybe died, unfortunately, or your mom was depressed and couldn't be here for you as a mother, or just, because she was very busy at work. So, and this again creates, unfortunately, anxious baby, but also so much anger.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
You are just, looking for this missing bond. So that's why you're angry.
There's always this missing feeling, this thing that's right.
Yes.
And if we look for it outside of ourselves, we tend to not find it or find it and disqualify it. Well, that's not it. I thought it would be it, but it's not it. The accolades at work didn't do it. This man that I thought was great and amazing didn't do it. And maybe he's not amazing. Constantly, I consider it almost like you're eating styrofoam looking for nutrition, but you're staying hungry. And you just don't understand. It's like, why isn't this helping me? Why isn't this easing that discomfort internally?
Exactly. And you know what you just said? I think it could be a great tips whenever you feel that way of like, I've been doing my best and I'm still, you know, just going back, you know, to that place of discomfort and uneasiness. Honestly, I think it's a powerful sign of finally look at your story, look at your past, because the answer that you have been looking for since forever is probably waiting for you in your past. And not through a complaining or blaming way, but more like, recognize me, acknowledge me, acknowledge that we survived to the Holocaust. And that now we have the survival guilt that also prevents us maybe to fully receive from life. Acknowledge that your mother was sexually abused at the age of 16. And you, as her daughter, you were also sexually abused at the age of 16, because it was also a way of belonging, of sharing the pain with your mom. Like, you, mom, I understand. And because you didn't talk about it, I'm going to talk about it.
What I find really empowering about this is so much of how therapy used to function, and so many types of therapy. They will take people to the past. You know, Phil Stutz talked about this and why he developed the tools, for instance, when he was under supervision and he was trying to help a patient who wanted to walk out of that session capable of dealing with crushing anxiety about a situation they had to deal with, you know, right away. And the supervisor at the time, the clinical hour supervisor, kept saying, no, 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 it's just resistance to talking about their childhood. Just talk about their childhood for this session. They have to. And he felt like he was somehow dishonoring the needs of the patient. So there's so much richness in the healing power of our past. And yet sometimes we could lose track of the power of the present as well. What I love about this approach is we are letting the past inform our ability to take our power in the present, to take our correct place and position so that we can return responsibility for some of the traumas, the narratives, the stories, and the blame that we can let go of, if we are willing to put the past back into the past and live from the present. So I love that it's not just a let's go stay in the past and relive things, but it's also not ignoring the past. It's kind of a beautiful blend of the two. I don't know if you feel that way, but that's how I sort of saw this mode of working.
I do feel that way. And it's, again, it's a question of order. I mean, when you're at peace with your past, when you consent to it as it was, you can be fully in your present moment. I mean, we are wasting so much time and energy holding on to the past in hope that it's going to change our present. Hoping that your parents are going to do differently. But they are not. They can only do differently if in your present moment, you ask them for what you would love to receive. And then, of course, you know, like, it's a free will of any of us, you know, like, maybe they're not going to understand. Maybe it's going to take them a few years to process it. But I mean, at the end of the day, that's the only thing we can do. Again, planting seeds and leading by example and doing our best. But what we can do, and this is our power, is nourishing our inner child. It's okay, you didn't get enough love from your parents, but I'm also not giving you enough love right now.
Yeah, and it helps us realize our behavior in our current family system, perhaps the one we're creating with our partner or our children or our divorced partner and the grown children. Such an amazing thing.
Oh. Exactly. So again, we go back to responsibility. True healing happens with being responsible.
I love this. I want to balance the fact that I mean, I could do a whole day with you, no problem. And I want to balance the stuff that I could go deep and down some sort of rabbit holes. I want to stay mindful, making sure that I can give you know, our listeners what they need too. But I'm just balancing that with wanting to talk about certain things. May I read something very briefly to you?
Of course, Barry, go ahead.
Affirmations. I know my place. My place is my own. No one else can take or fill my place. I am secure in who I am and where I belong. I'm imagining you recognize that, unless you just, you haven't looked at the book that you wrote in a while. And you just, right? Sometimes you write something, you're like, oh my God, I just need to forget about it for a minute. Those are some of the beautiful affirmations around this topic that you wrote. And right after that, in the exercise on belonging, everyone has a right place in their family system. Everyone has a right place in their family system. There it is. I'll read it a little better. Everyone has a right place in their family system. Yeah. I love that. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
Something very soothing about that, right? It's calming to know that we're not adrift forever.
No. Never. That's not true. You can hate your family, but you still belong to your family. You still have a place in your family. And I think, like you say, it's very soothing to go back home and just to take your place as it is. And I'm not even talking about love. And I think this is what also I translate in my book. I don't care if you don't love your parents. The only thing that I care about is you respect and accept them as they are. Because then you can also accept and respect yourself as you are. And so then you can keep moving on.
Such a big theme. It was clearly part of your story, you know,
yes.
Moving on. And in the chapter on light and love and then into yes, 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 part of that transition is about accepting partners today, right? So not just the past, but my partner is there, my partner's family. Tell me how, as you went through this journey yourself, how did it affect you as a person who presumably at some point began dating again? You know, maybe
yep.
you didn't. Maybe you were so, right? Maybe you were so passionate about this that it's consumed your energy ever since. But if you have dated, if you did open yourself to that again, how did this inform the way you showed up in the dating journey?
Well, so after my first divorce, I got married again.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Yeah. I did not know that. That's amazing.
No, because it's not in my book, Barry, because I was like, you know what? Like, I think it's enough, you know, for.
Yeah, you've shared enough. Well, thank you for sharing it with us. We appreciate
it's enough.
It.
he was my rebound. I think we were each other's rebound, you know,
yep.
Like
yep.
Different stories and everything.
A reason or a season, that sort of relationship.
Our marriage did not last again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
for a different reason,
for a different reason,
reason,
you know,
yeah.
Because no, we were just friends,
mm-hmm.
You know, we were just looking for ourselves,
safe harbor,
and yeah, exactly. And I love passion, you know, I'm a French woman, so I love, you know, this connection and this deep love and this true love. But I learned so much with him because for the first time of my life, I was able to talk
mm-hmm.
and communicate my
mm-hmm.
feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, I'm forever grateful. But why I was able to open up to him, it's because I did not consider him as my husband, but as a friend. So it felt less vulnerable. So after my second divorce, I was like, okay, what's going on, you know? And it took me again a few more years and a few more stories, you know, with different men to finally got my answer. I was afraid of the healthy masculine.
Yes, that was such a powerful thing that you shared as well in the book. Just this idea that one of the things that's obsessed me in life, probably because I had a very strong mother and it was about her needs always, is power dynamics and power differential.
Yeah.
I'd say, I think that's why that part of your book stood out to me so much as well. But that idea of power differential, and especially for women who are connected with their power, and there's different types of power. You delve a little bit into, I'm really very obsessed at times with that, the masculine side, the feminine side, and that we have both energies and we can connect to either type of power. So how do you feel about power dynamics with dating, with men? And do you feel like you want an equal partner? How do you perceive even this word? What does this even mean, an equal partner?
I think really for me, I wanted to control, to be honest, you
For
know, like
safety. I mean, that's a
for
safer
safety.
position to be in.
Exactly. You know, like I wanted to be in charge, you know, like I wanted him to be dependent of me so then he will never
Yes.
leave me,
And
you
what
know.
an illusion that is, by the way, because that
Oh.
was my whole thing in my 20s. You
Yeah.
know, even, you know, I took a moment where I was very into power dynamics. And believe me, whoever is supposedly on the bottom is topping from the bottom anyways, you know, in you know, some of those hetero and also in homosexual relationships too, apparently there's these power dynamics. But at the end of the day, the person who is supposedly in the seat of less power is still making choices to go along with and agree tacitly or not, and sometimes are being passive aggressive. Wow. So yeah, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. I'm just
No,
so
that's okay,
fascinated by
Mary.
your
I
story.
love talking with you. But so yeah, you know, like, and then finally, unfortunately, in 2019, I lost my best friend. That's the first man
I'm so
that loved
sorry.
me for who I was. I was 16 years old, and he really saved me. You know, like it's just for multiple reasons. And I lost him. He killed himself.
Ugh.
And I was like, "How dare you abandon me? How dare you?" Because you know, I always call him, and he always called himself the second man of my life. It was like, "Well, the first place is for your future husband, but I'm the second one." And you know, with him, I always felt safe.
Right.
You know,
Right.
whatever you know would happen with one of my shitty guys,
Yeah.
I would have my best friend to go with, and you know, it would be the alpha male. Don't worry, I'm gonna take care of him. You know, like it's stupid, you know, but it made me feel safe.
And from 16 years old, you know,
To
from what you
30.
shared, in your book too, this is a time where there was enough trauma in those teen years that you needed to find a man who could show you men could be safe.
Exactly, you know, and we can say it, you know, at 13 years old, I was raped in London. I had a very absent father, you know, like, so it was hard for me to trust the masculine, put it that way. And my best friend, Mehdi, came in my life when I was 16 years old, and he was 18 years old, and I was like, wow, I like that guy, you know, like he saw me for who I was and he made me feel safe, period. You know what? And at 35, when I got the call, like he killed himself, I was like, are you kidding? Because
Devastating.
if you would have asked me, you know, like who might, you know, commit suicide, I would have never thought of him. And it happened. And again, I hit rock bottom. And then you do know in 2020, we had this great time of our lives, the COVID and the lockdown and everything. And I was like, I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, now you're just being forced to sit with all of it. You can't
You
even
know?
distract yourself or find some things to fill
Exactly.
the joy. It's just like, oh, just sit in that now.
Exactly. And I was going through another breakup, a toxic relationship. I was like, it's never ending, Marie.
Wow.
I mean, I know myself, I know what I have to do. But you know, Barry, when it's like, no, I still do not want a healthy masculine to be part of my life. You know, it's crazy, you know, like how you can make yourself miserable. And
Wanting something so much that we repel it in a way because we're also afraid of, you know,
exactly. I was so
what if it
afraid.
hurts us or what if I'm not good enough? It's been an amazing thing sometimes when that person finally arrives on our doorstep. I'm thinking of a strong woman I was working with early on. She had her idea of what a great partner would be after a lot of people that I call them boys as opposed to men at times, men who turned out to be boys, a full man, a real man, in quotes, as she would put it, showed up. And she said, it was the first time I flinched. I freaked out. I didn't know if I was good enough. What if he didn't want me?
Exactly. It was exactly like your client. And I started, you know, like dating again, but I had a shift. I could see right away, same pattern, toxic man, codependent, just stop it right now, Marine. Stop it. You know what? Like it's over, it's done. And it really took me a lot of strength to do it
Of
because
course.
trust me, I really wanted to be with a man, but not for the right reason. And then, as a matter of fact, I met a guy who actually was a very healthy man. And I freaked out.
Yeah. I mean, right? It's like, this is great. It's like, oh, wait, why am I so anxious?
I was like, why am I so calm with him? Why am I so at peace with him? You know
Oh,
what?
I
Like,
love
he
this.
sees me and he doesn't want to, pardon my French, fuck me the first night. Oh, wow. You know, like, okay, I don't know what to do.
Unfamiliar. This isn't what I'm used to. What is
I was
this?
I was like, who are you? Like, what do you want? What's the catch here?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Then now the trust becomes an issue. Yeah. Like, what's the agenda?
Yeah. Where? Show me your darkness. You know what? Right away, and yes. Maybe we can deal together.
Yeah.
And it took a year.
Mm.
1 year.
A year for what? For you to let your guard down in a way and like learn to trust him. And so, what were the different things? Actually, before you jump into answering it, typically in that kind of situation, right, there's a few layers to navigate. Like the first thing that I typically have to do with that person is help them have love and appreciation for the defense strategy that they have, to not beat themselves up like, why can't I just open it? What? Like, to not be frustrated, but be like, this is how I keep myself safe. I love that I care about myself enough. Now, how do I help that part of me, the protector part of me, feel safe and trust me that I've got this? I have boundaries. I will put my needs first. I won't abandon myself. How can I help that part of me trust that this time I will take good care of me and us so that the protector can allow my heart wall to drop and open again and take care of the sensitive little girl that doesn't want to be abandoned, doesn't want to be hurt. So it's like there are these layers that typically I have to go through with a client of the protector, then the scared, sensitive little girl who might fantasize, want to get over attached. You know, what was your experience of that 1 year? What happened internally for you during that year?
Well, that's exactly what you just described. I had to tell my little girl that we were going to be okay.
Mm.
She was so scared, frightened of me being vulnerable, trusting a man,
mm-hmm.
being in my feminine, receiving,
yes. Yeah.
Talking
yeah.
about my emotions, my feelings, also, you know, asking for what I want.
Yep.
You know, because we're in a society where, oh no, you should let the guy lead and take the action. Why? Why? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. if I know also what I want. And I do believe if he's in his healthy version,
yes.
he's actually going to be flattered.
100%.
Oh my God. You know what? Like, it's so good. It's so great. And I have been talking with more of my healthy male friends, and they're like, no, it is so great actually when we can feel also the woman. You know, there is a desire that she also wants to know me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's not only about me. And I think there is power here.
Mm.
And I learned, you know, like to deconstruct, you know, like the story on how you should behave and who you should be and do not say anything.
Right. That's right.
Keep the mystery, you know, like, and let's
talk about society and cultural narratives now, right? All of it. Yeah. All of the way women are supposed to act, in quotes.
Yeah.
Right. In order to not turn a man off. As if that's also the most important thing. More important than you being you is you getting a man. It's, I mean, it's such BS.
Thank you so much. Can you listen to this woman? Okay. This is a great man here. Because if your man is turned off, you know what? He's not for you.
He's not a man. I mean, he's
a boy.
He's a human being, and I have empathy for him, but he's a boy with his own insecurities, yes. fears, who's still working on emotionally maturing, or worse, not working on emotionally maturing at all and just expecting you to behave in a way that makes him feel like a man.
Exactly. And I didn't want to be that woman anymore.
Yeah, good for you.
I wanted to meet on the same frequency. We are different.
Yep.
But we are equals. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm a woman that I cannot say, I would love to see you. And it's not because he's a man that he cannot tell me I am sad.
Mm.
And so, yeah, my 1 year was really deconstructing, you know, like all of the narrative.
Yeah, it's that forget everything you think you knew type of
exactly, thing. Exactly. Yeah. And it has been exciting, frightening, exhilarating, but
great.
Above all, I also finally loved myself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I just did a session this morning with someone where we spent the first half hour just spending time helping her connect. I think we're using kind of a combination of tool called Inner Freedom Superconductivity, which is a Thomas Leonard coaching thing, combined with sort of shadow work. But really her loving and accepting the very part of her that she had judged. For her, it took her back to a time in particular when she hated feeling needy, when she was texting a guy who was pulling away from her and she was needy and chasing him. And she said, I was acting like a moron. These are all her labels, right? Needy, desperate, acting like a moron, weak, you know, seeing this part of herself in very harsh, unloving terms. And being able to love the part of her that was afraid, that felt an absence and was scared. And to be able to embrace and love the very part of us that we would reject and try to hide from others, so that that part of us feels so loved and accepted that we no longer seek that validation and approval from the other, from the man, because we have it already internally. There's more integration and wholeness within us. Our heart is filled. The parts of us, in a way, it's like stand naked in front of a mirror and pick the body part you don't like and send it some love, right? It's that would be the physical representation emotionally of, and I've had clients do this too with body stuff. Hands on the part they don't like, sometimes upper thighs can be a popular choice here. And it'll be like, I love you. Thank you. I'm so sorry. Forgive me for disliking you. I love you for this and this and this. And the confidence that you have, the self-love you have after that, it lets you show up differently with quality partners. So that's my little addition to that. What was your experience like when you felt self-love and that wholeness? How does that feel different to you?
I was not anymore attached to the other one behavior or action of what he was going to do. I was like, it does not matter. I'm doing it for myself and it feels great for me. It feels good for me. So whatever happens on his side, it's all good.
It's non-attachment. About- now we can actually walk the talk of non-attachment to outcomes externally. Yeah. So look, we're coming up on an hour. We could probably go many hours. So I want to make sure, is it, if there's anything you really want to make sure you share that you just want to share, you know, you have the floor. How would you say it? Je vais laisser la parole. Je vais laisser la parole. Or say, you know, I'm trying to learn, practice my French.
Good job, right? Barry. Oh,
something like this. So
it's perfect. It's exactly.
You have the floor. You have the mic. Take a moment, and then we'll let people know how they can go deeper if they would like to.
What can I say? What does really matter to me? There is nothing wrong with you. I think like we have the tendency to dismiss our own feelings and emotions because we are so attached to be loved from others. While actually, like I just said, you know, like a minute ago, when you finally love yourself, you do know that everything is right. And you cannot do more than who you are, meaning you cannot replace someone else or heal someone else. You can only take care of your own heart. And by doing it, I think actually you give permission to others to do it too. And then for me, it creates a movement, the movement of love and true connection. And that's what I'm trying my best to do with family constellations. It's bringing back together what was once separated and finally feeling whole and complete because you are.
Ooh, just going to let that sit for a beat so it sinks in for people. That's so beautiful and so profound. You know, sometimes people will say that's a truth bomb. Such a masculine, destructive way of wanting to look at a truth. That was a truth blanket. It's just like a warm, reassuring blanket of truth. I love that. Connected fates, separate destinies. Where else can people find you and experience you and your work?
So I work remotely, which is a good news, I think. But I'm based in Miami, so you can work in person with me if you're in Miami, but I also travel a lot. So I go to New York every 3 months. I offer workshops in New Jersey at Salt House Healing Center. I also traveled to San Diego in California. And the healing center is Sojourn Healing Collective. But I also have an online course if you are interested in diving deeper in family constellations and why not offering this modality to your own clients.
That's great. What is the website for that? And I'll
it's
make sure there's a
teachable.
Link for people
it's,
too. When you send
it's
it
on
out.
My website too, Barry. Like it's under course, you know, like so you can find it pretty easily. And then of course, you know, like I'm on Instagram. I love connecting. I love, again, like I say, sharing my passion. I'm working on my second book, which is about love. So second husband will get his moment of glory.
Love that.
But
the chronicles continue. Yeah, the
all
chronicles
of my
continue.
exes actually are going to get their fame time.
All my exes. They don't all live in Texas, like the song says, but yeah. And look, I'm sure that your book's available on Amazon, but also hayhouse.com. We love Hay House around here. Is it on Hay House at this time?
Hay House, it's everywhere. Hay House, yeah. Barnes
it's
&
everywhere.
Noble.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
I
mean,
love
it's
that.
Everywhere. That's wonderful.
And your website, Marien7E, so MarienSelene. You can replay that if you need to. Doule, as they might say, two E's at the end of Selene. Yeah. It's been wonderful having you. I appreciate getting to connect with you. What you're doing is so beautiful and powerful in
Thank
this
you so
world.
much, Barry.
I'm so glad. And I'm sure we're going to chat more and cross paths again.
We will. Thank you so much for your trust.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening.